Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, March 19th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, Washington is taking Indonesia to the World Trade Organization over a dispute of poultry and beef. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason looks at how USDA arrives at its end of March prospective plantings report. And we'll have the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Thursday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat, 550 and a quarter, down 2 3/4. July, 556, down 2 3/4. Soft May wheat settling at 512, up 1 1/4. July, 515 3/4, up 1 1/2. May corn settling 373 1/2, down 1 1/4. July, 381 1/2, down 1 1/4. December, 399, down 1. July of 16, 420 1/4, down 3/4. May soybeans settling 961 3/4, down 3 1/4. July, 966 3/4, down 3. November, 946 1/4, down 4 1/2. May soybean meal settling 319.30, down 150. May soybean oil settling 30.62, down a penny. Now a few last trades. April live cattle, 157.90, up 132 1/2. March feeders, 214.12 1/2, down 12 1/2. And April lean hogs, 57.92 1/2, down 277 1/2. And those are settlements and last trade from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stewart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stewart-peterson.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says the Midwest will see only one well-organized precipitation event during the next 10 days to 2 weeks. And flood conditions will steadily improve as nearly all locations will dry down overall. If the forecast verifies and soaking rain does not fall in early April, many southern areas will be left with favorable soil conditions to allow for field work and early planting, as long as soil temperatures are warm enough to support germination. Many areas in the western Corn Belt have dried down recently and would benefit from greater rain before the growing season begins. Light rain will fall on some of these dry areas today and again Sunday into Monday, with much of the region seeing rain Monday evening into Wednesday. The rain will be welcome and will induce some improvements in soil moisture, but greater rain will be needed before the planting season to ensure the best possible conditions for summer crop development. Friday's temperatures will be in the 50s and lower 60s, with some middle and upper 60s and a few and lower 70s in the west, some middle and upper 40s in the east, and some 30s and 40s in the far northwest. Colder air will spread southward on Saturday. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. He is out of Mandeville, Louisiana, although today he is not there, but I think in Ohio?
Yes, I'm in northwest Ohio, Defiance. We have a rail loader out here that we built here a couple years ago, and I'm here for an Outlook meeting here tonight that we have almost 100 people coming at. So excited to visit with the group.
We're quickly rattling down the tracks toward the end of the month. Quarterly grain stocks report and planning intentions report, prospective plannings report. And after that, Dan, we put it in the hands of Mother Nature, maybe for 6 weeks, which begs me the question, I think we talked about this at some point in a previous year, but what is your benchmark for determining early spring, late spring?
Well, I usually watch the weather pattern around the equinox or the spring equinox here or the summer solstice to see if we have any major storms developing through that time frame. And it looks like the Northeast is going to get clobbered with another snowstorm. But for the most part, it looks like it's going to be fairly quiet weather in the Midwest. I see the National Weather Service came out with their 30-day and 90-day type forecasts, and there wasn't anything too much outside of the normal range. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think for the most part, your weather people are kind of wanting to keep the eastern Corn Belt have a tendency to be more cool and wet, and the western Corn Belt have a tendency to be, you know, drier and more normal type temperatures. And you can look at the most recent drought monitor, and it does indicate that there is some dryness or some dry spots, more so in the from Texas all the way up into the western Corn Belt. I think the drought forecast it shows drought really expanding in the Minnesota area for the summer, but these are just, you know, forecasts, and that's about all you can really look at them for right now. It doesn't, nobody's really big in calling for a major weather pattern adverse, except the Farmer's Almanac, I think, is the one that probably shows more heat and more dryness than probably any other forecast.
Let's turn our attention then to more immediate concerns, and that leads us, as we talked about this morning, back to the dollar and its volatile moves and keeping everybody on pins and needles about what futures prices in corn, soybeans, and wheat will do heading into the end of the month.
Well, that's been the focus of the last, you know, week or two, has been the strength in the dollar, and then yesterday we had a big break to the downside, and that stirred up short covering activity in commodities, and specifically here corn and soybeans. Wheat's kind of been in an uptrend for a week or more, and of course wheat is being driven probably more by production concerns, because the hard red winter wheat area is reporting probably more freeze damage, winter kill damage. They're noticing it more than they have in the past. But the corn and bean markets did hold on to most of yesterday's advances. But when you look at them on the charts, since we did move sharply higher in the overnight session and ended up closing lower here today, we do have kind of a spike high to go along with a spike low yesterday. So we may have already defined the range here going into next Friday's report, or is it a week from Monday?
Well, it's coming soon, that's for sure. Last day of March. And traders are inclined to think there are going to be a lot of soybean acres planted, and maybe at the expense to some degree of corn.
Well, that seems to be the underlining thinking based upon private surveys, that bean acres could bubble up anywhere from 2.5 to 4 million. Corn acres could drop anywhere from, I guess, 500,000 to maybe 2 million. and we'll kind of see. I think, you know, I caught Todd's interview with the state statistician there in Illinois, and I kind of read in between the lines that they were getting a lot of surveys that were uncertain. Farmers are fairly flexible, didn't get a lot of fall field work done, I think they've been kind of waiting around to see if the market would give them a clear signal or give them a selling opportunity in either corn or beans that they could sell, and then they would go plant that. So, you know, maybe this report number on planting intentions we get here at the end of the month may not be a real solid number, but it should show the general drift anyway of what seed salesmen have been reporting to us, is that, you know, corn sales have been soft, bean sales are strong, sorghum sales are real strong. You can't even probably buy a bushel of sorghum seed. And we know a lot of hard red winter summer or soft red winter wheat didn't get planted. It's hard to find a good field of soft red winter wheat in the state of Illinois and Indiana because it just didn't get planted last year.
Just a little bit of time left. Technically, as you look at the marketplace, what is your best estimate for where we zig next, up or down?
Well, it's all going to be on the report and okay. whether or not there's any major shockers in that report. And, of course, April weather. Commodities are supply-driven, and right now the supplies basically favor the bear side of the argument when you look at ending stocks levels and the crop that we're harvesting out of South America. But I think since we're going into the end of the month, end of the quarter, a major report, I think this break that we had started last week, it wouldn't surprise me that if we would kind of crawl our way back above last Friday's close as we finish out the month, and then we'll see what happens, I guess, a week from Tuesday, I think, is the 31st. So. And then that'll this report's going to be pretty important. It's going to tell us, it's going to shore up USDA's production estimates, whether or not they're, or okay. it'll show that they're too high or too low, and that there could be some surprises in it.
We'll leave it there. Thank you, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
In agricultural news, the U.S. is escalating a two-year-old fight with Indonesia over its agricultural trade restrictions by requesting formal settlement of the dispute at the World Trade Organization. Washington blames Indonesia for limiting U.S. exports to the fast-growing Asian economy. On Wednesday, U.S. Trade Representative Mike Froman announced the U.S. would ask the Geneva-based WTO to settle the agricultural dispute. USDA has criticized Indonesia's goal to supply all of its poultry and beef needs internally as protectionist policies. A new report from the Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers and Rural Appraisers says values for Illinois farmland took a 1-3% dip in prices in 2014. Good productivity land saw the greatest decline, 3%, from an average price of $11,100 in 2013 to $10,500 in 2014. Local farmers still account for 66% of the buyers of farmland, with local investors coming in second at 13%. Settlement of estates is still the primary reason for farmland sales. Lower commodity prices have driven cash rents downward. Traditional crops share income on excellent productivity farmland was $70 per acre lower in 2014 compared to 2013. Cash rents across all farmland classes fell $28 an acre for good quality farmland, $27 per acre for average quality farmland, and $19 per acre for fair quality farmland. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway, a Republican from Texas, has scheduled a hearing next Wednesday on the continuing contentious issue of U.S. country of origin labeling regulations for meat and meat products. Observers believe that once the WTO issues a decision on an appeal brought against the U.S. by Canada and Mexico, a decision that is widely expected to run against the U.S., the House Ag panel will need to quickly mark up a bill that would repeal the rule, but perhaps authorize a voluntary cool program. The WTO is expected to issue its decision by May 18th. The House Ways and Means Committee plans to vote next week on a bill that would repeal the estate tax, an action that is much desired by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Some Democrats on the committee are said to be interested in creating a estate tax exemption for some family-owned small businesses and farms. However, they remain opposed to a full repeal of the tax. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. USDA has just wrapped up its survey of more than 80,000 U.S. farmers. Todd Gleason reports on how the agency uses the information to develop the March 31st acreage forecast.
Well, in the spring, USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Division contacts farmers in hopes of learning how much of each crop they expect to plant. The agency contacts farmers across the United States. Corn and soybean farmers are of particular interest. This year, more than 4,000 Kansas farmers were tapped, along with around 3,700 in Nebraska and about 3,000 in each of the Dakotas, Iowa, and Illinois. Another 2,000 farmers each were contacted in Indiana and Ohio.
Our goal is to make sure that we're measuring small, medium, and large farms, so we use what's called a stratified sample.
That's NASS Illinois State Statistician Mark Schleusner.
That's a fancy way of saying for the biggest farms, we're going to talk to all of them. For the large but not biggest, we'll draw a sample, maybe one out of three of those. And for medium size, maybe one out of 10. And for the smaller farms, there are lots of small farms in Illinois, and they do contribute to the total. We might only measure one out of 25 of those.
Each farmer surveyed is asked how many acres they operate, how much of that land they intend to plant to corn or soybeans, and how much might already be in wheat. They're also asked about oats and sorghum and hay. The response rate goal, and usually achievement, is an amazing 80%.
Yes, our goal is an 80% response rate on all surveys, and we use several methods of data collection. Every producer in a sample will get a letter saying, here's the reason why we're doing this. We're going to measure planting intentions, and we will put a questionnaire in there. That letter will also have instructions for reporting over the Internet on our secure website. That's, in our mind, the best way for a producer to report, but if they want to fill out the paper questionnaire and put it in the postage-paid business reply envelope, that works too. Either of those are both inexpensive ways of gathering data, and that saves the government money, and by that I mean we're saving your money and my money. For the people who do not respond via the mail, we'll start calling. And we'll also send out people to interview face-to-face. Both of those methods are more effective in general, but they also are more expensive.
The biggest problem NASS faces when taking the acreage survey is that farmers usually have not yet made all their planting decisions. The agency knows this, and it's satisfied with best estimates. The individual reports, they're confidential by law, and the data collected, it's exempt from legal processes. The data can be aggregated at the county, state, and national level. Computers flag any large acreage changes at the individual level so that an analyst can check for a data entry error or make a follow-up call. The state statisticians review the total number of crop acres for any major changes. Total crop acres generally remain constant, and then submit the estimates in an encrypted file to USDA NASS in Washington, D.C. There, more analysis is done, and the final report is produced for release March 31. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Understand you've been traveling a lot recently, been out to the Dakotas. What have you learned out there?
Well, you know, I think a lot of us have heard there'd be less corn planted in the Dakotas, and I certainly didn't hear anything to make me think that's not going to be the case. A lot of these guys out here are talking about the kind of year they had last year. So while some of them had a really good year, you get in central southern South Dakota, a lot of them guys didn't have a very good year. They're talking about planting a lot of different things. Some of the seed dealers are talking about their corn sales down 15-20%. So there's a fair amount of less corn that's going to be planted up in this neighborhood.
And what are producers there most concerned about these days?
Well, I think part of the problem, you know, their basis has improved some, but it's still, you know, running about 70 under for fall right now. Given some of the yields some of them took off there last year, that's a concern for them. Of course, their input prices aren't altogether a whole lot different than what ours are in central Illinois. And so whenever you're looking at basis levels, like we're talking, as well as yields that are probably, you know, 20 to 25% maybe less than what we've been having, it's pretty tough to make that go, even if you've got, you know, minimal land costs.
Let's turn our attention to what the market has been doing in the last couple of days, and it has been a yo-yo of a market. Thank you to the dollar, I suppose, for much of what's going on. But we've now put a little spike high in both corn and beans.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously with the overnight market, a lot of guys were a little excited, thinking maybe we're going to reverse this thing, you know, after a couple of days ago going down 8 cents in the corn market. That pretty much took the wind out of a lot of people's sails. And, you know, a lot of us in this have been saying, you know, if we could get a little rally going into spring planting with, you know, with good weather. And I said with. I didn't say and or. I said with good weather. Maybe we could push acreage a little. But that doesn't seem to be the case right now. The market's not doing a whole lot to try to encourage more plantings.
Has the window on whatever basis play that we'll be seeing here before, say, you know, mid-June, already flown the coop?
Yeah, in my opinion. I've been saying that for a while. The really good basis pop was earlier in the year, of course, coming right out of the harvest low. I think from this point forward, maybe the most you can expect is to increase your basis, you know, the carry. So maybe 3 cents a month, you might be able to increase that basis. But we have to understand there is a ton of corn to come to town. And you know, there's a lot of guys sitting on a lot of bushels everywhere I've been. You know, guys aren't careful with how many bushels they're sitting on. So we have to understand if a lot of those bushels move, you know, basis is going to have a really hard time getting better.
Would it not be surprising if we saw at the end of the month more than 50% of the corn still remains in farmers' hands?
It wouldn't surprise me a whole lot. You know, I mean, there's a lot more than what there should be at this point, in my opinion. I think it's tough with a record crop. I mean, I'm a little bit more, not bearish, a little bit more possibly friendly, not bullish, the corn market, but a little more friendly the corn market. But that's talking new crop. Old crop is tough to get real friendly with because we have a quantified size of our crop as far as the old crop is big. And it still has to come to town for the most part.
Thank you very much, sir.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds, and he is out of Windsor, Illinois.
It's Poultry Day. The origins for the day are obscure, but the intent is to celebrate chicken and turkey as well as eggs. The history of the chicken is long and complicated, but its domestication goes back to perhaps as early as 3000 BC in India. In Egypt, there is mention of chickens as early as the Second Dynasty. The chicken industry in the U.S. is dated to the late 1800s to early 1900s, when a few entrepreneurs began selling young chickens during the summer for meat as a sideline activity on their farms. But it was not until the 1950s that the commercial broiler industry began to boom with the introduction of vertical integration. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the Elias Howe sewing machine patent was reissued. The machine produced 250 lock stitches a minute, more than the output of five hand sewers. Also instrumental during the period was the work of Isaac Singer, who invented the up-and-down motion mechanism, and Alan Wilson, who developed a rotary hook shuttle. After a long legal battle, the three pooled their patents into the sewing machine combination. In 1936, canned beer is sold to the public in Britain for the first time. And in 1942, Clinton Hart Merriam died. A biologist, he studied the effects of using birds to control agricultural pests. He also helped found the National Geographic Society and what is now known as the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Leonard.
It looks like the temperatures out there are rather balmy across portions of the Midwest. That's in response to a new storm system out in the southern plains that's working its way into our region. We expect to see that the precipitation from this will work its way across the lower parts of the Midwest during the course of the day today and into the day tomorrow for a little while. This is not a well-organized storm system. It is expected to come across the region with very little fanfare, very little threat of worsening flood conditions across the region. In fact, most areas are just not going to see that much in the way of significant precipitation. A trace upwards to maybe a couple of tenths of an inch of moisture will be about the majority of the kind of amounts we'll see from this system. Once this precipitation event gets out of the way, we'll have a quick day or two of drier conditions across a big part of the region. There is a cold air mass, though, that will be pushing into the Midwest as we go into the day on Saturday and on into Sunday. The frontal system itself will come into the region with very little moisture, and so we'll just notice the wind switching around to the north and it getting a little bit on the nippy side across the region. And as the frontal system works its way finally to the southernmost parts of the Midwest, we'll start to see a weak little low-pressure system form along the frontal boundary back in the plains. And that frontal system and the low-pressure center associated with it will work its way back to the east as we get into the early part of next week, setting the stage for another opportunity for precipitation. Probably the most important news potential here is for a significant low-pressure system to possibly develop in the northern plains early next week and work its way through the upper Midwest as we go to midweek next week. Now, of course, we're talking about something that's almost a week away. We have to be very cautious about it, but the computer forecast models have been somewhat consistent about this event in the last two or three days. If it occurs, we'll see some relief finally occurring across parts of the Dakotas, Minnesota, and portions of Iowa, even Wisconsin, as the system comes across the region. I'm a little bit of a pessimist here, so we want to be cautious with this system. I think there's still potential for it to weaken quite a bit before it reaches these areas. And again, it's a system that will occur during midweek next week, so plenty of opportunity for change. In the meantime, our temperatures across the region today will be mostly in the 40s and lower 50s, and we'll likely see a little bit of a warm-up trying to occur tomorrow. Not likely to have a huge impact on the region, but we will see temperatures tomorrow afternoon working their way into the upper 40s and 50s in the northern parts of the Midwest and 50s and lower 60s in the south. Saturday will continue to be very warm in the south, with areas from Missouri into southern Ohio and Kentucky in the 60s and lower 70s. Enjoy it while you can, so turn right around and cool things back down again as we get into the late weekend and early part of next week. Monday will only be in the 30s and 40s in the northern parts of the Midwest and 40s to near 50 in the south. Our lowest temperatures at night, once we're in the cold air, will be back in teens and 20s in the northern areas and 20s and 30s in the south. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Click on the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.